Proverbs 23:7. For he is the kind of man who is always thinking about the cost. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you.
Good morning. So thankful you're here this morning. Happy New Year, 2023. Let's hope and pray that this year is the most productive and spiritually fulfilling year that we've ever had. We always want to try to progress. We want to improve. We want to be better than we were in 2022. And that is part of what RTC is going to help you to equip you with. And train you and give you the tools necessary to make improvements. And that's part of the basic fundamental idea of this program that we're talking about today. If you were in Bible class, what a wonderful class we had. Brother David Stansfield did an outstanding job touching on all of the issues that we face in life and what the recovery program can do for us. And so it was awesome. I feel inadequate in trying to follow up that. I think it should have been the sermon for today, but nonetheless, we'll still try to do our best as we work our way through this. So before we begin, just want to follow up with saying we are thankful you're here. If you're a visitor, we want you to feel welcomed. We want you to come back. Our theme and objective of this year is to become a recovery church for the city of Mount Juliet. We want individuals who are truly seeking improvement, to become better, part of the idea of RTC, to become better. If people are desiring that and they want that in life, then we want to welcome them into our church, and we want to help them to continue that process of recovery. So, as we touch on this and we think about becoming that recovery congregation and this being the theme for our year, being a recovery church, and all of the elements and parts that are involved with that, we have to have that desire. We have to have everyone on board. In order for this to become successful, in order for RTC at Center Chapel in Mount Juliet to really make a big splash and impact on people's lives, we have to have everyone on board, all hands on deck. The more the better, the more the merrier, the more the greater the work can get done here. But if we look across the room, we go, well, this is Brother Joey's program. Well, this is Brother Tim's involvement. He's an elder here. So we just hope and pray that they're able to do this. And I'll tell them good luck and hopefully it works out for them and I'll support them. That's not going to fly. That's not going to function. We need everyone to want to become this recovery church. So Brother David Stansfield touched on the practical part of recovery. He talked about the cycle of addiction. I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach. We're going to talk about the theology behind RTC. We're going to talk about the Christology behind RTC. What's Christology? It means Christ-centered focus. That's what RTC program is, recovery through Christ. So in order for us to all get on board, in order for us to help the community, well, we have to start with ourselves. We need to take a look in the mirror and see where we're at. Before you can help someone else, you need to be getting help and recovery first. And that's part of the idea. Before we inform, we must transform. Otherwise, what does the Bible call this? If you're not allowing God and Christ through His Word, through this recovery program, which is the foundation of RTC, if you're not allowing this story to change you, then you can't help change someone else. This story must change us individually, hopefully collectively. Hopefully everyone goes through this recovery process, and then we can help the community. So this is the starting point on how we become that recovery church. The text that was so wonderfully and capably read for us in Proverbs 23:7. Notice the two parts to it. At the beginning it says, "For as he thinks in his heart, so he is." Look at the last part of the verse. "But his heart is not with you." That's the idea of what we're talking about becoming a recovery congregation. You can tell people all the things in the world, but if your heart and attitude is really not in it to help them recover, to help them get better, just say, "Hey, good luck. I hope it works out for you." That's not going to fly. That's not the attitude and the mindset that God wants us to have. So my translation, the NKJV, basically says, you have the power and capability to control and determine what's in your heart. You have that power, and God gives it to us. And the sad reality is many of us are unwilling to tap into that power. Many of us aren't willing to be changed, to be different. Many of us are fine where we're at. And so just think for a moment, if we have everyone on board in becoming this recovery congregation, if everyone is on board and supporting it in whatever ways that you can, if everyone is committed to this cause, we can truly help anyone who comes in. We'll be a welcoming congregation that wants people to improve, and it will render some wonderful results for us. And it comes back to our attitude and our mindset. From this passage in Proverbs 23:7, when you think about what's on the inside of a person, feelings, thoughts, and the progression and how these things are tied together, our thoughts, what you put into your mind, part of that cycle of addiction, that fantasy, and it's one of the reasons why God flooded this earth. Do you guys remember that passage back in Genesis chapter 6? Why did God destroy the world at first, which is a typology, it's symbolic of this great destruction that's going to come for all of the ungodly. That's the final day of judgment. The flood is just a glimpse of what that day is going to look like. And do you remember why God destroyed the earth? Violence. Well, where did violence come from? It came from people thinking about hatred. The thoughts and intentions of the heart were only evil continually. What they put into their minds and the way that they were thinking resulted in violence. It resulted in separation. It resulted in division. It resulted in the wrath of God coming on the people. He destroyed this entire planet by water. He only saved 8 souls. That should cause a fire in your heart. That should cause you to go, man, I need to evaluate and calculate my life and the choices and the decisions that I make. Otherwise, I could be like those in the days of Noah. And Jesus uses that comparison. People were doing what in the days of Noah? Eating, drinking, living merrily. Isn't that what Proverbs 23:7 says in the middle part of the verse? That individual who doesn't want you to improve, what they're going to say to you is, man, keep living how you want to live. You're fine. Don't change a thing about yourself. This ancient dialogue here, don't worry about studying this. Don't worry about putting this into your heart and into your life. You're fine the way you are. That's demonic. That's satanic. And unfortunately, there are too many people that are advocating for that. Oh, don't worry about change. Don't worry. You are just fine the way you are. There's nothing more devilish than telling someone who's about to be hit by a car not to jump out of the way. Think about how much you have to hate a person to not inform them of the dangers ahead. And again, I mean, I hate to harp on this, but there are too many in the community, maybe not in this particular congregation. There may be some, I don't know. Hopefully not. But there's a lot of people in our world today that would rather watch you get hit by a semi or a train than tell you to jump or push you out of the way. People do that spiritually as well. People are in spiritual danger of being eternally separated, eternally condemned from God, and they're saying, well, it ain't my problem. I'm not on the railroad track. That's Proverbs 23:7. His heart is not with you. Keep living the way you want to live, man. Keep being who you want to be. And that's what people push. So when we come back to transformation, we need to change. It's our thoughts that cause our feelings, and it's our feelings that cause these actions. Actions are, in their basic element and form, are an expression of your feelings, of your emotions. They're the result of your emotions. You might say something like this: oh, he acted out of anger. She did it out of love. The actions are determined by the emotions and the feelings. Your actions are a product of what you're feeling on the inside. Again, he acted out of his anger. Why? Anger was in his heart. That's why he conducted himself and behaved the way that that person behaved in that particular situation. She did it out of love. She had love in her heart. That's why she sacrificed. That's why she gave of her resources. That's why that person gave of her time. I mean, we understand that, but sometimes we don't live by that. Actions, again, are a manifestation of what is happening inside of our hearts. Emotions, our feelings, can be positive or negative. One writer said this. He gave six basic emotions, which are primarily all negative but one, towards the end of the list. He gives us fear, anger, sadness, disgust, surprise, and contentment or happiness. I would insert joy and love into this list, but nonetheless, most of these emotions that I just listed, fear, anger, love, sadness, disgust, surprise, contentment, happiness, these are the feelings that control our behaviors. When you look at the way someone's living, then you can pull it back to one of these emotions that's in their heart. Why is that person rude? Why doesn't that person want to have a conversation with you? Well, it's because of one of these things in their heart. Disgust or sad. Have you ever gone up to someone and you try to have a conversation with them? Hey, how are you doing? They say, fine, how are you? And you say, so how was your week? Oh, it was good. And there's no follow-up to that. You know what that means? They don't want to talk to you. And from a preaching standpoint, it's kind of frustrating because you want to have discourse. You want to have dialogue with people. But then the sad reality is there's some people that don't want to talk to you. They don't want to have a conversation. And if they think you're wrong or you're a bad person, or from my standpoint, if they think you're preaching something wrong, wouldn't I want to know that? Wouldn't I want you to get me out of the railroad track before I get ran over? If I'm preaching something wrong, if I'm saying something that's not correct, wouldn't you, out of a loving attitude, come and share with that person, hey man, this is what you're saying and it's wrong? But too many people have things like hatred in their heart, disgust, and they would rather not tell you to get off the road. They would rather see you get ran over. And that's sad. RTC is a program that can help equip and train you, give you the tools necessary, so when we do have people come into our community, when we have people come into our congregation, we know how to assist them. We know what to give them. We know how and what ways to point them, because we're on that path ourselves. Before we inform, we must transform. But if there is no transformation, then the information is going to be bad. And the Bible gives us this instruction. The Bible teaches us this. I mean, how many times have we ran across Philippians 4, 6 through 8? Think on these things. Think on things that are true, just, honest, pure, all these wonderful attributes and virtues. He wants us to think on these things that produce praise in our life, thanksgiving. So what we also learn from Philippians 4, verses 6 through 8, and this is what we're getting at, God tells us, and this is part of what he's equipped us with, he tells us that you have the power and ability to change the way you're thinking. You have the power and ability to put good, wonderful things from these verses into your heart and life. You have that ability. But some are unwilling to tap into it. Some are unwilling to do that. Mind garden, brain computers, however you want to put it. We've all heard these different illustrations. What we feed our minds, what we put into our minds, which is synonymous with our hearts, is going to grow. And the opposite is true. Whatever you starve, whatever you kill off, is going to die. It's going to be rid. It's going to starve and it will ultimately evaporate. It will go away. In other words, we could use many examples for this. The two that come to mind, drug abuse is a popular one. If a person is struggling with drug abuse and that's all that they think about, it's how they schedule their day and it's how they the pursuits that they make in life, well, that addiction, that drug abuse, is going to grow and it's going to get worse and worse. And eventually, if someone doesn't get help, it's going to cause death. The same is true with alcohol. The same is true with pornography. It will make someone spiritually sick, and sometimes it will spill over into physical sickness. But you're going to have some of these things in your heart coming out. And if you have a porn addiction and you go to your computer and you pull up pornography, that's going to continue to increase. You're not removing that from your life. The same is true with hatred. You say, I don't like that person. I hate that person. Or you know what? I don't like being in the vicinity of that person. I'd just rather stay away from them. Then you watch that person in a congregation from afar. Now, whatever they do, whatever they say, however they live, it's going to continually manifest and feed that hatred for that person. And what is so fascinating about that is I've actually asked people, why don't you like that person? And they can never give you a legitimate answer. They can never give you a good reason other than something as sad as, you know, I don't like the way they look. Really? You want them to change that? I don't like the way that they stand over there. Man, you need to take self-evaluation. If you can't give a legitimate good reason as to why you don't like someone or hate them, guess what's going to happen? Anything they say and do is going to continually grow that hatred towards them. And is that Bible? Is that biblical? Is that what God tells us to do? No, that's dangerous. But some people hate others or they dislike them. They don't even know why and they're not willing to change. RTC, Recovery Through Christ, is going to help you, hopefully, to see those problem areas in your life. To see, you know what, I don't have a good reason why I don't like that person. There's no legitimate reason why I don't like that individual. You know what, it's me that needs to change. I need to transform. Actually, it's not them. It's me that's the problem. And that's what RTC is here to help us do. Otherwise, these problems that we have are going to get worse. And a person that goes from an unhealthy mindset, a bad mindset, an ungodly mindset, whatever tag you want to put on it, and gets to a healthy place, a place that God wants you to be at, where you can think. So you're going from unhealthy to healthy. Now you're secure, you're bold, you're confident, you're peaceful, you're loving, you're all of these things. So now, as you think, so you are. You want to be a recovery congregation? You want to be like Christ? Christ-like in his mindset? Well, it starts with what we put in. Mind garden, brain computers. I mean, the same thing if we use the illustration of the computer. Our brain, in essence, kind of works like a computer. Viruses attack your computer. Sin attacks the mind like a virus. It causes distortion. It destroys files. It compromises information. Now a person can't think biblically or scripturally. Now they can't think logically or reasonably. And isn't this what Paul even preached? He went to people and he said, no, I speak words of reason and of truth. I'm trying to reason and give you logic. Well, some people that have put in or downloaded bad information, the output, the stuff that comes out, is going to be very ungodly. It's not going to be Christ-like. So what we want to do is renew our minds, Ephesians chapter 4, scan for viruses, download updates, go through the cleansing process of our habits, taking a self-inventory to ensure that what we put in, because we've removed all the bad, what we put in is good and healthy for us. Turn your Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 3, and we're going to do something a little bit different. Here's a recipe of righteousness. Now, all of us have come across a recipe book, and if it's a good recipe book, then it typically gets passed down. And this is what we find in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 through following. This is a recipe. We'll just read it, and then I'll let you see what the recipe is. 1 Peter 3, we'll begin in verse 8. And the first part of this verse is going to be pretty important for us. 1 Peter 3, verse 8. Finally, all of you be of one mind. Well, what kind of mind should we have? A mind of compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous. The translation for courteous is humble. Not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, what you return to people is a blessing. Knowing that you were called to this, that you actually may inherit the blessing. Now, pause for a moment. What is part of the blessing that he's talking about? Let me ask you a question. And this is, again, going back to RTC for a moment. I've thought about what tag or slogan we could have, and I like what David has done with 109's RTC program. Better is possible. That's kind of what the idea is. You want a better life. You want improvement, all those things we've mentioned. Let me ask you for a moment. Would you like to wake up every day loving the day ahead? Looking forward to knowing you're going to have a good day? Even when bad things happen or you put in unsatisfactory situations, place you don't want to be at, you can still have a good day? Because that's in essence what Paul was saying in Philippians 4. He was in jail writing this letter about joy, and he was telling the people, if you think on these things, you'll be positive, you'll have contentment, you'll have a kind of healthy heart, healthy mindset. Do you want that in life? Because that's in essence what Peter is saying here. Notice the next part of the verse, verse 10. He who would love life and see good days. Well, what's the recipe for it? Let him refrain his tongue from evil, his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Here's the positive part. Let him seek peace and pursue it. And here's the consequence. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, his ears are open to their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. But go back to the beginning of this. The blessing here is to have a better life. Better is possible. And what's wonderful about this is this was not new in Peter's day. Peter didn't come up with this. Actually, if you have a Bible reference, it will actually take you back to Psalm 34. So Peter didn't come up with this. Peter received this from David. Why? Because it worked in Peter's day, and it worked during David's time. Let's notice what it says that's slightly different in Psalm 34. Look at Psalm 34 just for a moment, and then we'll get to our final couple points. Psalm 34, and let's start in verse 11, but the actual quotation doesn't start till 12, but notice how he introduces this. Come, children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Who is the man that desires life and loves many days, that he may see good? Here it is. Keep your tongue from evil, your lips from speaking. Depart from evil, seek peace. But notice how he starts out the question. Who is the person that wants to love life and see good days? Who is the person that wants to live better? When you say, well, that's me. Well, here's your recipe, my friend. This book is an instruction manual. on how to have a better life. One writer said that this is the best psychology book that's ever been written. And I would agree with that. This is the best psychology book. This is the best recipe book because it gives us all the instruction and ingredients we need to have that better life here and now on earth. And that's the idea that we want to have. We want to have a better life. Then we want to be able to share that with others. And that's what RTC is going to be designed to help us do. And so it's only when we are transformed and change and we think better, we live better, we have a more godly approach to life and to decision making, then we can help people who come into our community to also live better and to think better and to make better and righteous decisions in life. And then we can actually become this recovery congregation that we desire to be. We want to become a recovery church. And with the final few minutes that I have left, what does a recovery church actually look like? Do you have any Bible reference for a recovery congregation? Let's think about that for a moment. What does, from a scriptural standpoint, what does a recovery church look like? Turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. If you don't know this story, then this is one of the most powerful and impactful stories in the Bible, and we don't have time to get into all the ins and outs. We've covered this before, but the Good Samaritan story, it's a wonderful story that teaches us a lot about how we can truly love our neighbor, and that's in essence what the story is all about. And what he's going to teach us in this section is that this is a recovery church that shows compassion. Remember what Peter started out with the recipe of righteousness. All of you have the same mind, having compassion for one another. That's part of the hallmark of a recovery congregation. You're a congregation that shows compassion to one another. Let's look at the two examples. So we have a priest, the high priest, and then we have a Levite who follows him. And would you say that these first two individuals that arrive on the scene with a man who's been wounded, who needs help, he needs assistance, he needs what? Recovery. Would you say that these first two individuals had a healthy mindset or a unhealthy mindset? Well, let's notice it. Now, by chance, a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, which is a biblical theme, you see something, he saw him, what does he do? Well, I'm just going to leave that guy where he is. I'm going to let him get hit by the train. I'm going to let him get shot by the bullet. I'm going to let this person go down this road of destruction, and I'm not going to stop him. You know why? It ain't my problem. I'm going to go by on the thank you. Yeah, it ain't my problem. I don't have to deal with it. What is the saying we have? Better him than me. That's not a biblical approach. That's the approach the priest had. Okay, so now a Levite comes on. Okay, so now we have another person who has a great chance of making this different and doing what's different than the priest. Likewise, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked. So he actually goes a step further than the priest. The priest saw the man pass by on the other side. The Levite sees the man, and he actually comes up and investigates. So he takes a closer examination. He came and looked and saw the man. So he comes up and looked, and guess what he thought? I don't want to deal with this. This ain't my problem. So he left. Would you say what's in their heart is healthy or unhealthy? Godly or ungodly? Probably a lot of fear, disgust. Not a lot of joy, not a lot of love. And then we have this third individual. And he shows up on the scene. And look what happens with the person who comes next. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came in where he was, and he saw him, and look what came out of his heart. Compassion. The first two did not have compassion. They didn't have care for someone else. They didn't have concern. They didn't care if the person recovered or not. They left him to die. But the Samaritan was different. Now, when you read this story, quite often you can say, you know what? I feel like the priest. I don't want to deal with problems. I don't want to get my hands dirty. I want to pass by on the other side. Sometimes I feel like the Levite. Maybe I'll come and get a little bit close to the situation, but then I want to retract and I want to back off because it gets too dirty, it's too sticky, it's too messy and bloody. I don't want to mess with all that. We want to be like the Samaritan. And I believe in this story, the Samaritan is Jesus. The Samaritan's Christ. And notice what Christ does with this man. He has compassion on him. So he went to him, bandaged up his wounds, verse 34, pouring oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. A recovery church is going to be a caring church. And so maybe we're not the priest, maybe we're not the Levite, maybe we want to strive to become like the Good Samaritan, but you know who I see us as in this story? When the Samaritan bound up his wounds, set him on an animal, he brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, "Do as I did. You take care of him." That's the responsibility now of the innkeeper for who this Good Samaritan, aka Jesus, took care of. Friends, we're at an inn. We are, in this story, the innkeepers. It's our responsibility to follow up where the Samaritan left off and to take care of people. A recovery church is going to be a caring church. And that was the instructions that the Samaritan gave to the innkeeper. Whatever more you spend on him, don't worry, I'll come back and I'll repay you. Isn't that what Jesus tells us? That one day he's going to come back and his reward is with him? If you haven't become a recovery church, if you haven't become a caring individual, then your reward looks pretty bleak. We want to become a recovery church. We want to be like Christ. And so when people come through our doors because Jesus has brought them, they've already started or begun that healing process. They've at least taken the first step to come and get help, to live better. And so now it's our responsibility because they've taken that first step to care for them. Now turn your Bibles to Matthew 25. This will be our final passage as we begin to close. And I want to quickly share with you the 5 C's of a recovering church. The 5 C's. The first one, I'm going to give credit where credit's due. Megan came up with the first one for me because I couldn't think of one for the first part of this. But here are the 5 C's from Matthew 25, verses 35 through 40. That I want you to think about when you want to become this recovery center, this recovery congregation. Matthew 25, beginning of verse 35, "I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in." A caring church is a catering church. What do we cater to? We cater to needs. Someone comes in and says, "I'm hungry. I need food." Basic necessity in life. We have a pantry. We have opportunities that we can go and get meals for these individuals. We want to be a caring congregation, then we must be a catering congregation. What about the next one? "I was naked and you clothed me." We want to be a congregation that covers people. So when it says at the end of verse 35, "I was a stranger and you took me in," that's providing someone with shelter. That's providing someone with cover, another basic need in life. We're giving them a place to stay. And then the next part, "I was naked and you clothed me." So we're a catering congregation. We're a covering, sheltering congregation. We're a clothing congregation. We give them clothing. We give them comfort. The next part of the verse, "I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." And we're also a companionship congregation. We want to spend time with those individuals. And if we do that, then Jesus says, "Then the righteous will say to him, 'Lord, when would we see you hungry, fed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and take you in, or naked and clothe you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?' And Jesus, the King, responds, 'Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me.'" And Jesus will repay that. And could I add another final C to this list that we started with from the beginning? In order for us to become this caring congregation that caters, covers, comforts, is a companion, and clothes individuals, you have to have a commitment. You have to be committed. And if we're committed to the Lord and to live by His will, then our commitment will always end with Christ. Now we've become like that Good Samaritan. Now we've become that caring congregation. Now we've been an innkeeper that really has taken personal responsibility, and now we can share that with others to help them to recover as well. If you're interested in becoming a recovery congregation, RTC is the program for you. We ask that you join, you support, you stand by, and you do all that you can to help people get better. Maybe this morning that person is you. Maybe you're unhealthy. Maybe you've been an honest, humble person who's taken a look into the spiritual mirror and you realize you have a lot of defects. You have a lot of things you need to change. You need this information to transform you. Let us help you. Let us assist you. Let us be those innkeepers for you, to care for you, to provide those needs that you have. Maybe you need to become a Christian. Let us baptize you into Christ so you can start that recovery journey and recovery process. Now you can get to a place that you can help truly provide someone else with the help that they need. Maybe you're here and you're scared. Maybe you're fearful that, you know what, I've been a part of this congregation for several years. I know that I'm struggling on the inside, but I'm too afraid to come out and reveal it. Can we just give you encouragement today? And can we just tell you that we love you? We want you to get better. We want you to improve spiritually. And we just want you to want that for yourself as well. So if you have any needs this morning, come forward as we stand and we sing.